And then the nobility of Germany, a variety of nobles who had reason to oppose Henry on other grounds, particularly this fellow Rudolf, raised the standard of rebellion, and they were sanctified by Gregory as soldiers of St. Peter. Milites Sancti Petri, in some ways granted the types of indulgences we think that crusaders got, which is an important point to stress, because historians have sometimes thought that the popes perverted crusade to their own interest in Italy in the 13th century, but actually back in the 11th century, Gregory is quite happy to use these religious indulgences and symbols to advance what he thought was a very legitimate religious position in Italy. There's the famous scene at Canossa where Henry intercepts Gregory as he's going north in January of 1077 to join the German rebels to bring down the emperor. And there the emperor stands barefooted in the snow for 3 days until the pope finally relents and brings the penitent back into the church. Many have seen this. Well, the church has won over the empire, you know, spiritual over state. Actually, Gregory was aghast at the fact that he'd been caught at Canossa. Henry had gotten him at his weakest point. As a churchman, Henry had to take back any penitent. Gregory had to take back any penitent, but he knew very well that Henry wasn't sincere, and that's exactly what happened. Once he was absolved, the excommunication was lifted. The soldiers of St. Peter were now insurgents, and it was open season to run them down, and that's exactly what Henry did. And on the other hand, Henry ignored all of his promises to Gregory, and later on there was a second excommunication, and that resulted in Henry actually invading Italy. And the only way Gregory ever got himself out of that was to call in the Normans, who not only rescued Gregory, but also sacked Rome, you know, the sort of thing Normans do. This clash, the so-called investiture controversy, had some major implications, though. It meant that the Holy Roman emperors had to move away from using ecclesiastical officials. And they did. They developed a new caste of officials, the so-called ministeriales. But it is also the immediate background to the preaching of the First Crusade. Urban II, who came to the pontifical throne in the aftermath of this very complicated and rather disconcerting war, the investiture controversy, which I think was a very defining point in Western Christendom, just as iconoclasm had been earlier for the Byzantine world, he had to somehow restore that papal moral authority after what was a diplomatic defeat at Canossa, the Norman sack of Rome. Gregory actually died in exile, and the unresolved issues over who has the right to invest bishops. So it's no accident that Urban II, himself a Frenchman, himself very much influenced by the notions of Cluny and the reformist traditions, hit upon the notion of launching a crusade. And this was as a result of correspondence that was sent by the Emperor Alexis I, who corresponded to not only princes who had provided forces to the Byzantine army, but to the then reigning Pope, Urban II. And this led Urban to preach the famous First Crusade at Clermont on November 27th, 1095. However, Urban in some ways had not resolved the basic issue. What he had done was simply widen the arena of where this issue was going to be played out. What is the relationship between spiritual and secular? What is the relationship of the Pope vis-a-vis the various secular princes of Western Europe? That is an issue that is played out and will influence the direction and the nature of the Crusades. And as stated earlier in this lecture, while the papacy could inspire, it could hardly direct any crusade. There were invariably papal legates on crusade. In the case of the First Crusade, perhaps one of the most impressive figures was the papal legate, Audemer, Bishop of Le Puy in south-central France. Nonetheless, this was not a papal army and could never aspire to be anything like that. And as a concluding remark, this unresolved issue perhaps made the Crusades all the more perplexing to the Muslims and the Byzantines. Because as these great expeditions came out of the West to conquer these apparently important shrines in Palestine, which economically and politically were really rather insignificant in the Near East, what was perhaps even more bewildering to Byzantines and Muslims is who was in charge of the Crusades. Crusades were preached by popes, but princes and kings directed them, led them, And I'm always quite curious to wonder whether any Byzantine emperor ever really understood who was in charge of crusade. And it catches at the fundamental difference between Western society and the Islamic and Byzantine society.